The following is an at-will presentation.
Hey, welcome back to The Drop-In. Thank you for dropping in. We have a very special episode today, but first I want to start with a little story. This was about 5 years ago, and it was at my first restaurant. It was like the first couple of weeks that we were open, so we were slammed. This was when we were just starting to get out the kinks, and obviously, like any busy restaurant when you first open, a lot of things happen that you can't really control. So one night, we were late on sitting people, and one party in particular, there was like a group of four, and this group of four in particular had to wait for about an hour, or maybe an hour and 15, past their reservation time. So one of the people from this group came up to me and they said, look, we have kids and we have a babysitter. They're watching them right now. We have to sit soon. I mean, this is crazy that we've already waited this long. You got to make something happen here. And honestly, it was at that point where I had nowhere to put them, even if I wanted to. It was a small restaurant. Obviously, these sound like good problems. Wow, you're so busy. Yeah, of course, that was great. But I couldn't sit these four adults, you know, who have kids at home, and I just felt so bad, and there was nothing I could do at this moment. So basically what I ended up saying was, look, I don't know exactly when I'm going to be able to see you. That's the honest truth. And I remember at that moment, you know, two of them at this point looked at me and they were just like, we're leaving, and this is unbelievable, like, we'll never be back. And so there was one woman, though, in the group who hadn't said anything to me yet, who walked over to me, and as the group was getting their jackets and leaving, walked over to me and just said, hi, I'm Michelle. We're leaving, and here's my card. And I remember she gives me her card, and I'm like, oh, no. I know what this is. Her card is going to be someone, you know, super important, someone who I should have known, someone who I shouldn't have ever made wait, and I was right. Her name was Michelle Promolenko, and she's the editor-in-chief of Women's Health. Now, at that point, it's like not only about Women's Health, but it's about every other magazine associated with that thing. So you're thinking, okay, I just ruined that relationship, and she's going to tell everyone at her company that I'm the worst guy and this is the worst restaurant. So at that point I said, thank you so much. I'm going to reach out to you and I'm going to make this right. I'll never forget this though. The lesson I eventually ended up learning here. I emailed her the next day and I said, hey, we screwed up. I screwed up. I feel so bad. I know I can never fully make this situation right, but I want to try. So do me a favor. Tell me the next time you want to come in. Dinner's on me. I'll set it up for you, red carpet, white glove, make sure that everything's great for you. I want to turn this thing around so that, you know, at least to just try to get her back. And she said, look, you know, stuff happens. And she was very understanding of me and of the situation. And she said, yeah, and I'll be back. I'll give you another shot. So she came back. We knocked her socks off, made everything great. And the moral of the story, the thing that I learned from this is you can always turn around a situation that you feel like could never get any better. And that woman, Michelle Promolenko, is now the editor of Cosmopolitan magazine. And we've gone on to have an amazing personal and business relationship since then. So I tell you this story, obviously to let you guys know of something that I've learned along the way, but also because this woman is how I met the guest of today's show, Lewis House. Michelle introduced me to Lewis about 2 years ago when I was first starting to dream up At Will and The Drop-In, and he's played a really amazing role in helping me figure out and navigate the podcast industry and how to be a great host. Lewis's podcast, The School of Greatness, is one of the top 100 podcasts and usually in the top 50 podcasts of all podcasts on iTunes, and he just continues to grow his empire of teaching business and marketing and personal success and how to become a better entrepreneur and business person. I'm honored to have him on our show today. Please welcome Lewis House.
What time do you wake up in the morning?
Depends on what I'm doing, but usually around 7:45, 8.
New York too? When you come to New York for the week, when are you waking up?
It depends on the interview. I mean, I've got so many meetings every single day. So tomorrow I'll probably get up around 7 and go work out.
But that's like 4.
I know. And I was from in Iceland, which is like 1 p.m. or whatever there. So,
okay, what were you doing in Iceland?
I was doing a photo shoot.
Really?
For 5 days for a rebranding for my website, yeah.
With like some Alps in the background?
With waterfalls and glaciers and...
You just needed it. You couldn't do the green screen? Come on, man. We're on a budget.
I was talking to Nick Onk and my friend who's done a lot of photography for me in the past. And I was talking to him about 6 weeks ago and I was like, I want to do a rebrand on my site because it's outdated and I need some epic photos. And I was like, would you take some shots of me here in L.A. or New York? And he goes... You've already done that. That's outplayed. He's like, if you really want to stand apart from everyone else, you got to do something epic. And I was like, what about Iceland? It just came out of my head. And I was like, what about Iceland? He's like, yes, that's the best place in the world. So I was like, all right, let's do it.
So from there, we ordered a car.
We booked a flight. Yeah. We went there. I came here a day early to go shopping with him to kind of get some key pieces so we could have some cool stuff. And then.
So just like tight shorts.
Exactly. Yeah. It was freezing, man. It was like raining and freezing the whole time, but it was so beautiful.
Perfect.
The last day we rented a helicopter and was just flying around and dropping off these like desolate locations that no tourists go to and just us. It was amazing.
I love it.
Yeah.
So did you get what you wanted?
We got a lot. I think we got it. Yeah.
Okay, so there's a photo on your website of you, and I have to ask you about this because I have two questions about it. There's a photo of you on this. You're calling it outdated, but I think it's pretty cool.
No, they're cool. It's just everyone's copied it. So
yeah, okay, so there's a photo of you standing next to a motorcycle, and my first question is, do you ride?
I don't ride.
Okay,
so that was in New York, just randomly. We were like, that's a cool prop. Let's go stand next to it.
That's the best. Because I'm sure you get that jacket, a lot. People are like... Yo, man, like, what type of bike do you ride?
Yeah, no, I'm terrified to get on this.
All right, so anyone who goes on Lewis Howe's website, that's just a prop. It's not
prop,
his bike.
Prop.
Okay.
I got a helicopter and a sick Jeep in Iceland, and they're not mine. So.
They're not yours either. Yeah. Okay, so my second question about the photo then is you're wearing a tuxedo.
The leather jacket.
And then there's a leather jacket.
I don't own the leather jacket either.
But my sub question to number two then is, when in life would you be wearing a tuxedo, but then also be like, I don't know, like the jacket's too formal. I need to get a little bit more rugged.
Yeah, for a photo shoot, that's when you do it.
Someone's like, ditch the jacket. We need edge.
Exactly.
We need more edge.
Nick likes edge when he takes photos of me because he doesn't want to be too preppy. My style is like a black V-neck and gray jeans.
And he's like, that's not going to work.
Well, you know, if you want to design and have like good branding, it's like you got to really push the edge a little bit. You know?
I feel like for the next photo shoot, you could do like body paint,
maybe. I could, man. Yeah, I could.
Like just like the shirt is actually painted on
you. Exactly, with a tie painted on. Yes. Yeah, it'd be perfect.
You were pursuing a lot of different things, and you were successful at them.
Mm-hmm.
And then at one point, you kind of, you know, you were able to keep some things going, but ultimately you changed the position of your life. And
yes.
And you started kind of going after all these other things that you never knew you would even want to do, probably.
Right.
When was that?
Oh, man. I think after getting injured playing sports, I really wanted to be a pro athlete for a long time. That was my dream. And then when I got injured, it was kind of like, well, what am I going to do the rest of my life? I have no clue anything else to do because this is all I thought about. So I really, for about a year and a half period, I was sleeping on my sister's couch. And I was like, okay, I need to reinvent myself. And I was afraid to because I didn't know how to. I just became an athlete and developed myself in different sports. So I guess in some ways I reinvented myself in high school and college by learning different sports and mastering different things. But it was still one skill, being an athlete. And I didn't know anything else. So it was terrifying at first. But then I really embraced it after I started to see results and started to see, oh, wow, this is cool when you can learn new things and you can grow the feelings I got. And the confidence I built by mastering different skills, by immersing myself into something like salsa dancing for 3.5 months, all day, all night, consumed every piece of media content, was watching salsa clips, was listening to salsa music, was dancing at clubs every day, was practicing in the mirror by myself, listening in the car while I was truck driving to only salsa music. It's like when I immerse myself in something to master something that I was horrible at to start and actually became pretty good at, it's a great confidence builder and skill builder.
But I didn't want to cut you off because that was crazy. And did you lose a bet?
No, I just
How did the salsa dance come about? I'm a good salsa eater.
Exactly. I was paying $125 a month in an apartment in Columbus, Ohio, above a music hall, like this old music hall that there'd be like jazz bands playing there and like big band music or whatever. And once a week, they would have a salsa band come play, and they'd put a salsa, like a dance floor down, and all the salseros would come out from around Columbus, Ohio to dance all the Latins.
And they'd just start ringing on your doorbell, and they're like, get up here.
I would go down, right, because I'd hear the music, and I'd go down and just watch. I was just mesmerized by these guys twirling these girls around, like the art form, the dance, the music, the sexual energy, just all of it. I was like, wow. And the music was so powerful for me. I couldn't understand what they were saying, but I could feel what they were saying.
And were the girls good looking? That's the real
question. Yeah, I mean, the girls were good looking, but it was just more like, you know, I just really started to appreciate the art. Yeah. And so I would go down for months and just watch. And girls would invite me to come out and dance. And I was like, no, I'm horrible. I don't want to make you look bad. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just a tall white boy. And then eventually I started to build relationships with these people. And I just kept going down to watch and enjoy it and just, like, talk to people. And then one day, this girl just like dragged me on the dance floor. I'm like literally like on the ground laying there like a child, like, no, I'm not going. But I really wanted to. I just didn't want to embarrass myself. And she got me to go out there and taught me like the basic step. And then after that moment, I was like, okay, I'm going all in. I'm giving everything I have to master this, to not have two left feet. And I'm going to be the best white salsa boy dancer there is in the world. I was like, okay, I'm committed. And then from that moment on, I just took lessons every single night. I went to salsa, you know, there's clubs in Ohio, believe it or not, that had salsa dancing. So I went out like 3 or 4 times a week.
Are those the ones with like passwords or something?
No, just random.
I remember the scene from like Along Came Polly.
Yeah. It's not like that. No.
Okay. And so you can still crush it on the salsa floor.
This is over 10 years ago. And I've traveled all over the world just to salsa dance at like the best clubs.
Really?
Yeah. I once wanted to do a travel show where I came from like a white boy perspective in the Latin world around the world.
By the way, I kind of think that's amazing.
I think it's cool too. Yeah, and I would go to the best salsa clubs and then talk about the culture and meet the people and the food and the energy. And
why are we sitting here right now? Why aren't we doing this?
Hey, make it happen.
I'm serious.
Sell the show for me. Yeah.
We got Nick Onken.
There you go.
He's going to set something up perfectly.
Exactly. Yeah. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, so I kind of did it just for fun. I would travel the world and for business and stuff.
And make money?
Just like for fun.
So there's no, there was no money behind it.
It
was literally just passion.
It's passion. But the thing is, when I look at that as like a one area of reinventing myself by learning a new skill, you're like reinventing some part of yourself. You're mastering something. And from that, it gave me such incredible confidence to connect with people from all over the world.
Right.
Because when I would go to another country for an event or let's say or something, like a business event or a conference or whatever, I would find salsa clubs because that's where I could go to meet people. And even if it was a country that didn't speak English, I could still speak the language of salsa. And so the girls that I were meeting, I'd be like, what's your name? And they were like, no hable, you know, whatever, no hable inglés.
Right.
And be like, okay, I'm Lewis, name, you know, we'd just get names. And then we'd connect without words. And we could understand each other through the language of dance. And so it developed such incredible confidence and patience in myself and all these different things that I didn't have necessarily at that level by reinventing something, by learning something new. And so I've applied that in many areas of my life since then. This is 10 years ago when I was like 23. And, you know, that's why I'm constantly looking to reinvent, to lean into things that are uncomfortable or that are scary because I know what's available on the other side.
What's the scariest part about what you do now?
I think putting myself out there and opening up in a vulnerable way. You know, I have this podcast and sometimes...
this little podcast. Yeah, make it sound like it's not like a huge thing. Guys, for anyone listening, if you haven't heard of it because you're not like a podcast buff or because you never look at the charts, Lewis Howes' podcast, School of Greatness, is top 100 always, usually top 50.
For me, it's kind of like... every time I reveal something or I'm vulnerable or open up about stuff that I maybe don't want everyone to hear about, it's scary for me. It's challenging, but it's also the thing that helps like grow it. You know, whenever right. I open up about something, people are like, oh, this is real. You know, it's not just fluffy. It's real. And they can relate in certain ways. And I think it connects people deeper.
Okay. Of all the podcasts that you've done, of the 400 almost, yeah. what's the one that when people say, how's podcasting going? Or how's the, you know, the last 400 been? What's the one that like sticks out to you? Do people ask you this?
Yeah, like what's your favorite? It's hard to say.
I'm not asking for your favorite. yeah, I'm asking for the out. One. Even maybe it wasn't even. Maybe it was the worst one.
Sure, sure.
Or you're not allowed to really say
I would
that
say Tony now. Robbins was pretty powerful for me because I remember when I started it, he was like one of the five people that I wanted to get on for sure.
Yeah.
You know, he was like
you're
a
like
dream
if I
guest.
Ever if I ever reach that where I
yeah
could
it was
get
like a dream guest. It was like for him having Scooter Braun on. I think it was extremely inspiring for me, and we've become friends. And yeah. I've known him through Adam Braun for years now. But I'm just like really impressed with what he's created as a you know an agent and someone who's developed talent and built businesses and brands around individual gifts. So I'm just fascinated by how he's packaged people.
Yeah.
And how he does his deals and everything. So for me, that was a powerful one. I mean, I just had Maria Sharapova on, and I thought it was extremely fascinating to get behind her mind. She's the highest paid female athlete of all time. And, you know, was number one in the world as a tennis player and has won every major Grand Slam. So to learn, like, what it was like moving to this country when you were younger just to train full time
right.
and going pro at, like, 14 or whatever, how old she was, and beating Serena at 16 or whatever it was to like
crazy.
Just understanding the mindset of how someone who's number one in the world, how do you get there? How do you overcome everyone wanting something from you all the time? I mean, you have a lot of celebrities who are podcast hosts now through your network. So I'm sure you get to get behind the scenes of a lot of it as well. But for me, it's all about finding the top performers in the world in anything that they do. It could be ping pong. It could be, you know, track and field. It doesn't matter. It could be writing, singing, whatever. I want to reach the top performers and then learn. And so that's the whole point of the podcast.
I think it's great. If you speak to like these intelligent people all day and yeah. all night, basically, it's yeah. like, for me, that would be almost intimidating as it is.
It is sometimes.
Like I don't even like reading an article that's like, these are the 10 things that you should do because if I haven't done one of those 10 things yet yeah. on my way to with a startup or with a whatever, with a media company, then I'm like feeling bad about myself. So
right.
does that ever happen to you? Are you ever like listening to these people saying, oh man, like.
I mean, sometimes I'm a little like intimidated. I'm like a little nervous before because I just want to have I want to make sure it's a great experience, you know, for some of these people. And
you mean like this dim lighting in here?
Yeah, exactly.
It's no, sexy I mean, in here, guys.
It's nice. But I think I just want to make sure, like, some of the people I'm having on, I'm like, I'm inspired by. That's why I have them on. And a lot of them I've been working on for, like, a year, you know, with their team, their publicist, like,
right.
and it's finally happening. And I'm like, I don't want to mess it up, you know? It's right. like, okay, I want to make sure they have a great experience so I can build that relationship, but also my audience has a great experience. And so, you know, I'm just trying to do my best with each person and really show them how much I appreciate them at the same time.
Do you feel like there's a time that you remember that you were like actually you just screwed it up, like you were embarrassed by it? Or we would have never heard that one because
yeah.
you tossed it.
There was a couple interviews maybe where I felt like I didn't give my best. Like when I was done, I was like, I feel like I was maybe a little out of it, or was like wasn't present as focused as I could be, or I didn't ask the right questions, or I didn't get what I wanted out of them. Yeah. Like I felt like I let my audience down, but. Every time, and there's times where I wasn't going to release those, but then I did, and people were like, oh, I love this the most, you know?
Yeah,
so
right.
it's
you
like,
never
you never know.
Know.
It's like, all right, well.
But did you give the waiver? Hey, guys.
One of them I
did. Feeling good
one
today.
Of them I did, where I said, I feel like I failed you in this interview.
Who was it with?
A guy named Ty Lopez.
Who's that? He's Mario Lopez's brother.
No, he's like a big internet marketer guy who's got like mansions and models and shows his Ferraris all the time. And I
Perfect.
Was interviewing him about like, why he does this, you know, why he is so driven by making money and then showing it off and just kind of asking what's beneath that for this book about masculinity I'm writing. I was like, why, what's beneath that? Do you feel like that's something you need to do? You know, I wasn't trying to make him wrong. I was just curious.
Right. That's what they say you do when you have a small,
right,
what
exactly.
do you call it?
Yeah, yeah, small hands, yeah. And so the challenge was, I'll just give an example for this interview. we weren't facing each other like this. They had it set up where it was like we were kind of like angled toward each other, but it was more of like a 45 degree, but he wouldn't look at me at all. He was looking like at the camera. And
this is, where was this?
His place, because he didn't want to come to my place.
Oh, man.
So it was just kind of like the setting wasn't set up right, and he was never able to get like open up, in my opinion. I didn't feel like he opened up. So I told people in the beginning, like, and I even told him during it, I was like, I don't feel like you're opening up. And, you know, he had his reasons. So it's just, it is what it is. But I almost didn't post it out there because I was like, I think I'm going to get a lot of flack, which I did. I got a ton of flack where people were like, I'm so disappointed by you for even interviewing this guy and for putting this out there. And I'm unsubscribing. This is the only interview you've ever done that I didn't like. And so it like hurt me. My heart was like, ugh, you know, I don't want to upset people.
Of course.
But then there were a lot of people that were like, this was so insightful and thank you for revealing these things and this and that. So it's like, can't please everyone.
No, you never can. Yeah. And it's all subjective anyways.
Exactly.
Do you read all your reviews?
Yeah. I read most of them. There's sometimes, like, I haven't read them in probably a few months, actually.
Okay, well, I have.
Oh.
I read them. Have you ever seen Mean Tweets with Jimmy Kimmel?
Where
he makes the celebrities
read
mean tweets that people have written about him?
I have seen that, but I haven't.
We're going to do this.
Okay,
real quick.
Cool.
This is Lewis Howes reading.
These are mean tweets, or mean
these
reviews.
These are mean iTunes reviews.
Oh, man. Great.
This is a new portion. We're just starting
today.
They're so
funny because they're like.
New portion. Great. Is called.
We'll see how many of them put their real name down. That's what I'm.
Well,
it's usually
see.
Like sexy man 95
you'll
or whatever.
See, you'll see. I'm only gonna make you read one.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't read them in a few months. I see them going up, increasing, but
no. First of all, okay. Let's just let.
I
this,
see the number going.
Let
up.
This be said. Yeah, exactly. So I'm gonna have Lewis read my version of mean tweets, which is a mean iTunes review on the podcast app, but. You have to understand, like, 99% of them are all the
five
most
star,
amazing
yeah, yeah.
thing that, you know, and people, like, are saying they owe their lives to him.
Yeah.
And people are, you know, just so enamored with not only him but his podcast and get so much from it and take so much away from it. Mm-hmm. So just know that part. And
sure.
Then we're going to have Lewis read the one out of a million
this
that's,
is probably,
that's negative.
Is
okay?
This a recent one or was it, like, the first few months from, like, 2014-15?
It's 15.
Yeah. So this is like before I had like quality audio and all these other things. So it's like.
Well, okay. First of all, another thing is it's surrounded by five stars once.
That's hilarious.
So first I'm going to have you read the name, the title of it. Okay. And then the name of the person who wrote it.
Okay.
The title of it.
Number 13. Yeah. The title is Full of Himself, 2 exclamation points.
And the person who wrote it.
The person who wrote it is Banana Penis.
Which says
January,
it all, I think, right
January
there.
26th. Yeah, this is the thing. No one actually says their real name. It's like,
of
why
course.
Can't you just tell me who you are?
Of course.
And be real. So,
we can have a conversation.
This guy thinks he's hot stuff. Shilling products. Don't waste your time here. Yeah.
First of all, his name is Banana Penis. And so that was the thing that really struck me about
it's
this.
Hilarious.
It's like, buddy, come on. Have some self-respect.
Yeah.
And then go the step further and actually say, this is who I am.
Exactly.
I want to have a real meaningful
yeah.
review
give me some
here.
Feedback. I'm open to feedback for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's why I knew you'd be okay with this
because
you are. You're the type of guy who's open to feedback.
Absolutely.
You're not saying, oh, that guy's an idiot or he's an asshole. You're saying,
right.
If you actually have something that you think could make my show better, please.
Yeah, I'm all for
let
it.
Let me know.
I'm all for it, yeah. The thing is, I used to be so offended by that stuff years ago and you know, I'd say maybe some every now and then I get upset about it, but I'm so like just reading that it has zero effect on me right now.
I could tell.
And you know, I've had a lot of coaching on that because I used to react to every negative thing on Twitter. Like someone would say something or like contradict me or whatever. I feel like I always have to defend myself.
Right.
And now I just say a simple response. I just say thank you for the feedback. That's it. What is someone going to say after that?
Do you respond with that?
I say thank you for your feedback. And that's it. Or if I respond at all, that's what I'll say. Otherwise, I won't respond.
Do you block people on Instagram and on Twitter?
If they
stuff?
Say like, if they give feedback, like feedback, I don't block them. If they're like swearing at me or something, or you know, saying stupid stuff that's like really annoying, then I will. But if they give me feedback, no. But if they're like swearing or like nasty. I'm like, why are we here? You know, so, but I look at like, this is the thing that I've learned over the years is that you can't create and criticize at the same time. Creators, you're not going on any podcast and leaving a negative review and saying you have a banana penis or whatever. You're not saying these things to other to other podcasters, or you're not leaving negative reviews if you're an author on other people's books, because when
there's
we
a mutual respect.
Well, when we create, we don't have time to right. go bring someone down or leave a negative review, because we're too focused creating and we know the value on how hard it is to create something. So we're not trying to build and you know, break people down. We're trying to build people up.
What do you spend money on? You've obviously become more and more successful, and you have some cash to throw around.
I spend it on experiences.
Like what?
I mean, I just went to Iceland for 5 days, and I flew out my friend, Nick Onken, who is a photographer, and I paid for the whole trip for both of us. And I got a helicopter ride paid for, rented like a sweet Jeep. I was like just rented the rental car, the hotel, everything.
Did you guys stay in the same?
We had an Airbnb, but it was like a 2-bedroom. So,
no, that's what I was going to ask. Did you stay in like a twin bed or something?
No. I mean, two twin beds put together. Yes, yeah, because it's a Europe, you know, Europe, yeah, exactly. European style.
The European standard.
Sucks. But it was actually not bad. It was actually really nice. And so I pay for experiences to reinvest in myself, to learn. Like in a week, I'm going to India for the whole month.
That's awesome.
I'm going to a meditation retreat center for 7 days. I'm going to be taking a meditation training, not a silent one, but just a meditation training. And then for another 12 days, I'm staying there to do a facilitator training to learn how to teach meditation to other people. So for me, I'm investing in my skills as a human being. I'm investing in my emotional intelligence, my health, the foods I eat, the fitness I do, the training I do, I invest in that. I invest in my team. I invest in the content that I'm producing. And I'm investing in my business. So I'm putting a lot of money back into the ideas that I want to take out of my head and bring into the world. This next book that I'm writing, I'm investing in that, the research, the editors, the writers that are helping me, the design, my website redesign. Like everything is investing to make an impact in other people's lives. Invested in a celebrity booker to get quality guests on my show so I can continue to make a deeper impact in the world. That's what fills me up, is knowing that I'm creating meaningful things that add so much value to people's lives that helps them in whatever it is they want to get to. And I'm willing to spend anything on that. Yeah. So I've got a $4,000 car that I paid for in, you know, cash in full, $4,000. 3 or 4 years ago, I have an apartment that is like a...
First of all, what car is $4,000?
Well, I got it from a mentor of mine.
Is it a jalopy?
It's a 1991 Cadillac Eldorado Baritz.
I'm not mad at that, though.
And it's got 50,000 miles on it. It's pretty sweet looking, actually. But it's just like I don't care. I don't have like fancy watches. You know, I've got simple clothes, although I just bought some new clothes for this photo shoot. But
hey.
It's more of like an investment in the branding.
Tuxedo.
Exactly.
Meets leather jacket.
Exactly. My apartment in L.A. is actually not that much for what it is in L.A.
It's
in a
dope,
beautiful place.
For the
record. Yeah. But it's like I've got my team that works out of there. I've got my recording studio. I've got an office in there. So it's like half workspace, half living.
Good for taxes.
And yeah, and that's it. I mean, I've got my team. You know, I've got like 10 people on my team that I invest in. But I'm not buying things. I don't care about things. I care about experience. Like, you know, I'll upgrade the new phone, you know, the new iPhone, because it's part of my business. But I'm not buying watches or fancy stuff. Like, I'm buying experiences and investing in myself.
I dig that about you, though.
Thanks, brother. So, and I dig that about
and
you.
And I dig that
What's,
about you.
What movie is that from?
And I dig that about you. That's from Jerry Maguire.
There you go.
Come on.
Jerry my fucking Guire.
That's right. We got to get Cuba in here. One thing that I ask some people about, if they actually are this, is being sober.
I've never been drunk in my life.
It's fascinating to me.
Yeah, never been drunk.
I wish I could say the same for myself.
Right? I mean, I have sips every now and then if like Bailey's on ice, but I would just call that like sweet milk. It's not really alcohol.
Yeah,
so.
That's right. Until you have 10 of them.
Yeah, right.
Then it's sweet something else.
Something else, yeah. But I've never been drunk. You know, maybe I've had like a full beer in like my whole life of just like the amount of sips I've had from different like tastings. But, you know, I don't drink wine. I've had like a couple of sips of wine, but that's about it.
And where did that come from somewhere? Were your parents alcoholics?
No. No one in my family was drinkers, really. I mean, maybe they'll have like a glass of wine every now and then, but my parents didn't drink.
So they didn't drink. So you never grew up with it around the house. So that had something to do with it.
But my siblings, my brother went to prison for selling drugs.
Okay.
When I was 8, and so every weekend I would visit for 4.5 years. We would drive to the prison visitor room and hang out with my brother, and he went there for selling LSD to an undercover cop. And so I remember thinking then early on, I was like, "Fuck, I never want to be here."
Right.
Like it was miserable. It was just like sad, you know.
Yeah.
It was an amazing experience, and it was an amazing education for my brother, and it transformed his life. Like him being there made him who he is today. So it's like I'm really grateful for what he learned. But it was just like I never want to be trapped in like a prison, you know. But I also, for me, it was more of like proving people wrong, to be honest. Like in the beginning, it was like in high school, I went to a private boarding school and kids weren't really allowed to drink. It was like you kind of like, unless you went off campus and like snuck it, but no one really did it. Otherwise, you'd be expelled. And I remember thinking, like, I need every advantage as an athlete because I'm not the biggest, fastest, or strongest. So I need to be the most focused and the most alert. And so in high school, I never had alcohol. And then in college, like, my sisters at one point were like, "You're going to be like this drunk jock, like frat boy." And I was like, just to prove them wrong, I said, "I will bet you money that I won't have a sip of alcohol in college." Just because I wanted to be like, prove people wrong,
yeah.
You know? And I didn't have one sip of alcohol my entire college career. And I went to so many parties where it's just like kegs everywhere, right. And people were trying to get me to drink constantly. Girls were throwing themselves at me to like just get me to drink because they knew I didn't drink.
Right.
I had every temptation, but I never felt tempted.
Right. So what were you doing at these parties?
Just hanging out, like having fun. And then eventually, that was like freshman year, and then eventually I just stopped going. Or I'd go for like 30 minutes just to see my buddies and then be like, all right, I'm going back and chilling. And I would like start salsa dancing. You know, I was like finding it's like now it's like I go salsa dancing because people don't really drink. You can't really spin a lot and you know, and be sober. Or you can't be drunk and be spinning a lot on the dance floor. So, and then after college, I was just like, why start now? You know, it didn't make sense. I was getting results.
Right.
And now I have my other vices. I eat lots of candy bars and, you know, I'm not the best eater all the time. I'm pretty healthy, but I was like, I love sugar and candy. So it's kind of like the next thing to get rid of.
And then what, though? They say that, right? They say that once you get rid of one vice, another one.
I don't know. Yeah. Who knows? That's why I'm doing this meditation thing to see if I can evolve a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
See what I can uncover.
I think it's great because honestly, when it comes to being sober, I ask myself that a lot. Is like, would I be who
you
would
sober?
I be? No, I'm not.
Oh.
Who would I be if I was?
I'll tell you what, I'm very focused.
Yeah,
and
I can tell.
I feel like I can create a lot better because I'm very clear minded, and I save a lot of money by not drinking from all my other friends who drink or smoke or whatever, you know, and I wake up better, you know. I can work out harder. I don't feel hungover like a lot of people do when they're drinking. And I feel like it just slows your brain down a little bit. The next day, when people explain it to me, I've never had it, but they say like it takes like a day or a day and a half, and then
it can take 4 days.
And your body gets out of rhythm.
Yeah.
And if you want to be a top performer, you've got to be in a routine and have clean rhythm and be in the flow as much as possible. But if you're breaking your body down and your mind, and then you got to build it back up to get in the flow, you're not going to be able to perform at the highest level of your industry if you're out of flow or if you're constantly struggling to get back into it. So you want to set yourself up to win every single day the best of your ability. Now, you know, I'm not perfect either, and there's nights where I'm up till like 3 or 4 a.m. and I'm off rhythm, but it's like if you do that and drink and this, you know, it's like harder to get back on track.
Right, absolutely. What would you say to your 18-year-old self right now?
I would say start living your life to inspire yourself and others and show others what's possible as opposed to proving others wrong. Because that's what I was living for, was to prove everyone wrong because I was bullied. I was, sexually abused as a kid. I was made fun of a lot. I was always felt alone and not accepted. And so I said, fuck everybody. I'm going to become the best in the world and prove them all wrong and make them have to like me. And it was a very lonely, dark place and a lot of suffering internally. I would achieve all my dreams and then I'd be miserable. And I was like, why? I'm achieving everything. And I'd be so driven to achieve at the cost of proving people wrong. And it's just to say, I told you so. And fuck you forever, making fun of me and this and that, And it was just, again, it drove me to achieve, but at the cost of a lot of misery and suffering. So I would tell myself, like, let go of this pain and suffering and do things because they inspire you and you want to inspire others to do things as well through your gifts, not to try to tear them down.
Yeah. It's good.
Yeah.
I'm over here writing notes. I don't know if you know this. Writing notes, just taking notes.
yes.
So a lot of people could say, or maybe not a lot of people, but people might say, look, he hosts a podcast and he does these webinars and he does maybe a conference. I could do that.
Mm.
Do you feel like anyone could do that? Or does it take a very specific set of skills?
I think it takes developing certain skills. I mean, if you would ask me if I could do these things, if I could have written a New York Times bestselling book and host this podcast and host this big events that I just did recently.
Or even be on this podcast.
Right, exactly. but if you would have asked me if I could have done these things like 4 years ago, I would have been like, I'm not ready because I hadn't developed certain skills and had the practice reps. So I think you got to start somewhere and build upon it. You got to start small. I started off doing like small networking events, and those were scary at 25, 26 because I'd never hosted an event with professionals. And like 300 people showed up, and I was like, I feel like a phony. Like, I don't even have a job, and I'm doing this like thing.
The business card was just your name.
Exactly.
No information.
I had one sport jacket, and I wore that, and I was like trying to look professional. I didn't own anything. I was sleeping on my sister's couch. I was like, who would ever trust me for anything? But I had to start somewhere, and then I built upon that and developed my chops through applying and taking action over and over and over again. So, and the things I'm going to create in the next 4 years, I'm not ready for them right now.
Yeah, right.
But what I've done in the last few years is building me up to be able to do that.
Tell me about the conference.
I hosted my first big live event called the Summit of Greatness.
Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you. It was incredible, man. It was like the feeling of just it was scary as shit producing this, first off,
because
it cost me $200,000 to produce. It was first time doing this event. I really didn't know. It's not like a business or marketing conference. It's not an entrepreneur conference. It's more of like a personal development type of thing. It's touching on like health, wellness, business, relationships, and spirituality. So I was like, is anyone going to come to this? And I wanted to host it in Columbus, Ohio, my hometown, because Ohio's tagline is the heart of it all. So I wanted to create a heartfelt experience for people. I wanted to give back to my community. I wanted the whole thing to be meaningful, to have an intentional purpose, not just do it in New York or LA like everyone does.
Because that's easy, right?
Yeah, because everyone is like, well, if you did it in New York or LA, I'd come because it's right here. And I'm like, no, if you want to be a part of this, like, you've got to take the time to come and get out of your comfort zone and experience something that is going to be magical. And I feel like that's what we created. It was magic the entire weekend. I've never seen people from 18 years old to 68 of all walks of life, men and women from all over the world, come together and on the last night dancing for 3 hours all together, like nonstop dancing, celebrating what we created over the weekend. We had incredible performers. We had 10 of the biggest speakers from around the world come and talk about these different topics. We had a drum line. We had like the most incredible experiences. We did world-class athletes doing workouts in the morning that you could do workouts with. So we just tried to create a whole experience that was different than every other conference that's out there. Again, I'm constantly looking to reinvent myself and to create meaningful things for people that is different than what everybody else is doing, And we pulled it off somehow, and I'm excited. We already sold more tickets in 1 week for next year than we did this first year.
That's amazing, dude.
In like a year that took to sell the tickets.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So I'm very excited. It's a new season, trying new things.
And you would consider Tony Robbins to be a mentor of yours, yes or no?
Yeah, I mean, I've met with him a couple times. I've interviewed him a couple times, but I'm
Can you do an impression of him?
No.
Come on.
I don't even know what I would say, but
not necessarily what he would say, but just what
he's just very expressive. He's just like, you got to be focused. You got to be certain. This is what, get in the state, baby. You know, he's just like, he's just very. I don't even know if like focused. He's very focused and clear and certain in the way he says things, and he's very intentional in how he looks at you, and how he just like connects to your soul.
Right. And just grabs it.
And just like takes you in and brings you in and just like he's with you like the whole time. And he just feels every part of your body and your soul. And he's like connected to you like I've never seen anyone connect to someone. So for me, when I first interviewed him, I was more fascinated with the way he connected with me. Not even what he was saying, but how his energy was with me. And it's different than this because we were set up sitting next to each other. So he was like a lot closer. So he was just like touching me a lot, like little taps and just like really emphasizing. And so I was like understanding what he was doing while he was doing it. But I was like, man, it works so well. For like, you know, to connect with me, I was like, damn, you're good.
I know what you're doing, but damn.
But damn. Yeah, he's amazing, man. He's you know, some people don't like him, but his ability to connect and transform people out of their bullshit, you know, he's one of the best in the world at getting people out of their own way, you know, and showing them how to live the life they want. So,
what would he have said about your conference if he was there just looking at it from an outsider's perspective?
I think it'd have been like, I don't know. I mean, he's a pretty like from the team members I've met of his, he is so like militant with the way they do things. And I don't know if you saw the documentary he had.
Did
you watch it? Yeah. And that's like him. Like,
I am not your guru.
He's been doing this for 30 years. And someone told me on the inside that like, every event, he does the same thing where he goes over every night, like, what went right? What went wrong? How can we make it better? Like, he's been doing that for 30 years. Like, how can we make it better? You guys blew it here. You got to step up there. Like, he's constantly pushing the edge to be, like, the top performing that he can be in his team. So that level of focus and determination to push his limits, it's like, it's inspiring. So I think he would have said, like, you did a great first start, you know, good try for the first one or something like that. Like, here's what it is. You know, who knows?
Thanks, Tony.
Yeah, right. The attendees is all that matters to me.
Right.
Their experience, the reviews we've been getting, the feedback has been like, there were people who have been to Tony's events who said, I've been to every Tony event and this was.
I'm not going anymore.
Well, they just said that it's a different experience. Yeah. It's different than his. And they're like, I had a better time, you know. You might learn different things in different places, but I wanted to create the feeling of magic.
Right.
My vision going into this, I said this to my team, to the volunteers, to the performers, the speakers. I go, here's my vision. We are creating magic for people. And it's going to look different for every person, but this is what we want to create. We want to create this feeling of magic, that they're developing something in themselves. They're uncovering what's been holding them back, and they're unlocking their inner greatness. And so we want to create that on every touch point, from the moment they walk in to the moment they get the program to what we say to them. Everything was thought out and intentional to put them through a journey, an experience from day one to the very end. And again, it was all thoughtful and intentional. It wasn't just like, let's throw an event and throw some speakers together and just like see what happens.
It'll be great, yeah.
Yeah, and because we were thoughtful, and listen, we, you know, every night we went over what worked, what didn't work. And there's a lot of things we can improve upon, of course. But I think because our energy and our thoughtfulness was there, people were so – they loved it, you know. They loved it. So I'm very pleased with what we created for the first year.
All right. How do people find out about the conference, and how do people find out about you?
LewisHowes.com is the best place to go. The conference is summitofgreatness.com. And, you can learn more about me on social media at LewisHowes.
You can learn a lot about him on social media. He is all over the place and does much better job than anyone I know. As he's turning on his pro camera right now to upload later, I mean, this guy has figured it out and has figured out how to make social media a part of your life that's in an organic way. I think a lot of people that, you know, they're doing this Snapchat here or tweet here or whatever, and it's feels a little bit forced.
Yes.
I think you've been able to do it in a way that feels like, hey, I'm incorporating you into my life.
Yeah.
I want you to see what I'm seeing, not to be even flashy or showing about it, but just so that like you feel like you're taking a, you know.
Yeah, getting behind the scenes look. And I'm not trying to do too much. I think of people that do it all day long, and some days I don't do much at all, and then other days I try to show a little more. It's just trying to be as organic as possible.
Right.
Yeah.
Nice work.
Thank you, man.
Thanks for coming on the drop-in. Lewis Howes, everyone.
Awesome. Thanks.
Thank you, Lewis Howes, for being on the show today. And guys, do yourself a favor. Go to Lewis Howes' website, not only to see the amazing things that he's up to, but definitely before he changes his website, make sure you check out his leather jacket tuxedo combination picture. I love you, Lewis. Thanks for listening to another episode of The Drop-In. Join us next week for another great episode. And if you have any questions for me, tweet at me, at Will Malnati, or you could just tell me to go fuck myself. See you next week.
That feeling when a song comes on the radio or at a party or anywhere really, and it kind of just stops you in your tracks. I think everyone has at least one song that makes them time travel to a moment that was especially meaningful or memorable.
They would play it at this dance that they had for the two middle schools from the north side and south side of town called the Night Place. And I like really, really, really wanted to dance with Corey Rosenberg, and such a crush on her. I planned it out. I was like, when No Diggity comes on, I'm going to roll up to her right when the Dr. Dre verse starts, and she's just going to be so impressed. I know all the words, and I'm going to like do the one dance move I know. This is going to be my moment.
I'm Missy Modell, and this is That One Song. Conversations with people about the music that has left a lasting impression on their lives. Find a new episode every Thursday on At Will Radio.